Zika is just an update. I think Antibiogram is just an update. And just do it and then come back and get those. Is that okay with you?
Do the informational items and then come back.
Yeah, there's something that I don't know where he was. Massage should put them like it is.
And Mason didn't send anyone?
No, Mason didn't.
I mean, from UNC.
We sent emails. We're trying to text them in the background to see if...
If you can get someone here who can... Because I think we decided either the CEO or a designee. So I would have hoped he'd sent someone. So, Mr. Sheriff, you'd like to go forward?
I'd like to go ahead and call the Southern Nevada Health District Facility Advisory Board meeting of June 28th, 2016 to order. Do we need to give any sort of formal roll call, or have we gotten the call that we're good?
If Dean is okay and Ed is okay, then we're okay.
So I'd like to move to the first item here.
It should be noted that even though the meeting is called, there's no form, so only informational items will be heard. So the form is obtained.
All right. So we will defer the public comment, or...
You can do that.
Is there any public comment at this point in time?
We can still do that.
Okay. So the public comment, is anybody retaining items that are appearing on the agenda? Seeing and hearing none, we will move on to the next item, and that is the adoption of the June 28, 2016 agenda.
We have to defer that.
Defer that.
And the consent agenda.
We'll defer the next item on the consent agenda. So at this point, I'm going to report the discussion, possible action, and turn over to Dr. Iser to discuss the modified charter.
I think, well, we could talk about it, but if there's any action, we should defer that too.
Wait a minute, I might get lucky and get somebody to call in and do that.
And this would be just a discussion.
We're trying to reach Larry Bernard. He is off-site. He did not accept the meeting.
Okay. But the Zika update, there really isn't anything to vote on. I can give that to you.
Okay.
And the Antibiogram.
Okay, let's do the next two items in the Zika update, please.
Sure. So I think everyone here knows that the mosquito that carries Zika, which is the Aedes aegypti normally, but it might be another species, but Aedes is the genus, doesn't currently reside here in Clark County. But in all the maps that CDC has published, it can reside here because we have the right kind of drier but tropical climate that can support it. It doesn't freeze here, in other words. If you go much farther than the borders, certainly if you go up to Pioche and up to Tonopah, it does freeze. So even though there might be some Aedes that might come during the summer up there, it's likely not going to get established. So Clark County and a little bit of Nye County, primarily Pahrump, would be where it can establish itself. So we have already expanded our identification, our surveillance, to include virtually all of Clark County, and we're reevaluating that right now, and I'll get back to that in a couple of seconds, so that we can determine when and if we see Aedes here. And the likelihood would be in one of two cases. One, either the mosquito hitches a ride in, for example, with cuttings or with plants that have been raised in either Arizona or Southern California, and it hitches a ride here. Or, and I'm thinking this is where I'm worried, is that during the monsoonal season, if the rains are widespread enough and the flooding is widespread enough, then, for example, let's say the monsoon goes from Southern California through Southern Nevada through Arizona, that the mosquitoes, which then breed prolifically, might be able to make an inroad here as well. So that's that we're approaching both of those in separate ways. So we're monitoring where we think the mosquito can make can hitch a ride in, and we've already experimented with how we will deal with that. I'm sure you've seen that we have had some St. Louis encephalitis here in the valley, and so we have been spraying and have gotten those mosquitoes. They're Culex. They're a different kind of mosquito. We've gotten those numbers way down, and we're continuing to find St. Louis encephalitis. It's carried by birds, so it's very likely that we'll see that, and relatively routinely, different perhaps from year to year. West Nile virus is also carried by the same mosquito, and is also carried by birds and horses and other animals, but we haven't found any West Nile virus. St. Louis encephalitis is relatively mild, but we're using that as sort of a test for how we'll respond. And again, we responded by fogging, and we fogged at various places, including almost across the street from us now. It used to be across the street from us at Springs Preserve. And then we're expecting those commercial properties, or in this case, a park, to mitigate themselves, that we're not going to continue to spray for them because it's at taxpayers' expense when it should be their own. True for also the greenhouses or the garden centers. So if the mosquito does hit your ride in here, that's how we plan to keep it at bay. If we keep the mosquito at bay, we'll keep the virus, the Zika virus, at bay, because it only seems to be transmitted by Aedes aegypti primarily. So if Aedes aegypti then comes in another way, that would be more widespread, and so then we would pull together all of our partners to determine how, and we would do this, we've already started to do this part of it, to determine how we take care of that. So we had a meeting with all the cities in the county and us about 3 weeks ago, and then I've been having separate meetings with the county and city managers or their delegates to talk about what we should do. Right now, the only mitigation that occurs really with any degree at all is what the county does on county-owned property. So Moapa and Overton isn't county-owned property. Most of the area by Laughlin, where we've had the monsoonal floods in the last couple of years, is not county-owned property. But during those flooding seasons, we did work with them, and we provided them larvicide, and adulticide fogging if necessary to get those down. And the difference is larvicide, your pellets, very stable. You put them in standing bodies of water and it kills the larvae without really doing much damage to the environment. Other than that, once they emerge as mosquitoes, then we fog with a mosquito killer, and that can kill butterflies and bees and a variety of other things. So again, we've been experimenting with how much do we fog, and especially with the hitching a ride kind of thing, and that seems to be working very well. So a lot of this has to do with the fact that CDC took back a bunch of money that had gone out to all the jurisdictions on Ebola and reissued it to states, and then we applied for, I don't think we've gotten any funding from that yet, but we applied for probably 3/4 of the funding that comes to the state, again, because of our geography. And that will enhance our ability, really, in the first part, to do more surveillance. And what I'm trying to do is expand out to Pahrump, because not only should we be doing that, but it will help to keep the mosquito out of Clark County as well. And then you might have seen that I think the Democrats are not allowing the $1.1 billion that the House and the Senate want to put through, and they say it's not enough. I fully agree with them. I don't know about tactics. But $1.1 billion isn't enough if you're trying to keep mosquitoes at bay, especially the Aedes mosquitoes, which are found, again, all the way from at least Georgia, down around Florida, all the way over to Southern California, and that would bring this virus in. All the cases so far in the United States, with maybe the exception of one, have been transmitted in other countries and brought back here by the people who have visited other countries, Brazil, Puerto Rico, wherever they, or territories, wherever they may have gone. Currently, we were at about 54 tests, 6 positives, and that's where the worry is. So if you get the mosquito and you get infected people, then you get infected mosquitoes, and then they can infect other people when they bite other people. So that's why our first job is to keep the mosquito out. If Congress ever passes and the president ever signs this amount of money, it will come out to the states, primarily in the states and localities where the need is. Right now, we're not eligible to apply on our own, but I've been working with our congressional delegation to make sure that counties or health districts or health departments are eligible in addition to states. Because otherwise it comes to the state, we have to apply through the state, there may be some lag time, some other issues, and the state will take its cut. If counties are also, or districts like mine, like ours, is also eligible, then we can apply directly and get the funds directly. and get them much more quickly and more efficiently, effectively. That's pretty much Zika right now. I think if I were to predict, unless we get widespread monsoons, I don't think we'll see the mosquito make much of an incursion here into Clark County this season. But that's just a prediction, and I could be 100% wrong on that. So please keep that in mind when you see in the newspaper that we have found Aedes here. But I think next season is when I worry about it, because like everything else with global warming, mosquito ranges extend, and so I think it'd be much more likely to see it consolidate in Southern California, the mosquito, and in Arizona, which would make it riskier for us here.
So Aedes are they're in containers. They're sort of opportunistic in terms of getting a little out of the water somewhere.
Yeah.
To your abatement, obviously, that's why there are community information or PSAs going out saying, make sure you turn on your flower pots and do that sort of stuff and don't have any tires, because that's, we had a big prior life in the Navy. One of the things we worried about was good dengue, because the Navy's carried dengue fever. And so, any place we had folks in the area, you just had to be on top of making sure that there was no containers of water, jars, anything, because they can just about do it in a public spit, so.
That's correct. And in fact, we see dengue making incursions across the border in Texas in particular from time to time. So there has been some indigenous spread of dengue, which again goes through, as you point out, through the same mosquito. And we have put out those PSAs. Right now, our vector control program is going out and doing lectures. I've asked them to reach out to the cities and the county to get on the agendas for the city council, the county commission meetings, so that we can get more. And of course, the information that I've given you, I gave to the board last week, so it's up if people see it. But for the cities and the county, it comes across live, I think, for the most part, or streaming. And so hopefully that's one of the ways that we can get it out. What we want to do, there are a variety of things we want to do with whatever portion of the budget we get, and one is to get, currently our staff does, during the wintertime, they do public housing and housing complaints, and in the summertime they do this. But we need a dedicated staff to do this educational stuff throughout the year, to work with public works departments in the county and the cities to make sure that they keep brush cut back along waterway, especially. And you're actually right. In every interview that I've done, if you have a drain pipe, one of those corrugated drain pipes, that may drain from your roof, and you have a sprinkler system, enough water stays within those little corrugations to allow the mosquito to breed. And you're right, it is a day biter, and so we have put those warnings out. We've also sent out information to all of our providers about what to look for, and that's how we're getting these potential cases now, is that it's a bit like Ebola. Have you been in the right place at the right time, and do you have symptoms? And really, it's very similar to that. So, the first question is, do you have symptoms that we need to worry about? And there will be, about 80% of people are asymptomatic, but we have to find a way to cut back on the number of tests that we send. So, are you symptomatic, which means probably viremic, blood in the virus in the bloodstream, and have you been to Brazil, Puerto Rico, these states of Mexico, and so on, and then we'll send the test off to Mexico. I think our lab within a month will be able to do our own Zika screening here, and so it takes a while, like with Ebola, like with H1N1, I'm sure you remember that CDC has all the tests go there, and then they send it out to some of the state labs, and then out to the locals. So we'll get that within a reasonable amount of time.
Sure. We're happy to see
that. Yeah. Well, yeah. Can we do a confirmation?
Did anyone else come on the phone since we took a roll call?
Mason Van Allen, is he on the call, or Chris Mullen?
Okay.
Well, what's the life cycle of the mosquito?
Well, the mosquito, especially with viruses, it's human to mosquito to human. Now, with West Nile virus, there are several animal intermediaries, not intermediaries, but other animal hosts. But for Zika, I think it's all human. Dengue, I think, is all human as well. And if I may refer to that, dengue, it's hard to compare, because if you're a woman of childbearing age, and especially a woman who is pregnant, the results can be very devastating. But dengue by itself, it causes a lot of death and disability. West Nile virus has some death and disability to it. SLE, not the St. Louis encephalitis, not so much. But dengue is far. Yellow fever also is carried by the same mosquito, and that used to be endemic here in the United States as well, and hasn't been for a long, long time. Where you get a lot of intermediate things are like with parasites, like with not necessarily with malaria, but with a lot of liver flukes, liver parasites, blood parasites. They go through a life cycle in another host and then come back to their vector and then infect humans.
So Zika's here for good. It's not like something that would come and run its course and naturally go back away to West Nile.
Probably like West Nile is that it will be, it could become endemic in the United States. Currently it's not. It is in Puerto Rico and in Brazil and in various places. Where this will really be horrible is, and it's now made its way around the world, and it's become, if not more infectious, it's certainly become, it's got a lot more side effects than it did when it started out in Uganda some time ago. But now they're finding this variety of Zika making its way back to the old world into Africa. And there'll be no way of stopping it in Africa, and that's going to be devastating to the entire continent, or the continent they can harbor it.
You've got the risk of the birth defects forever, not just during that stage where you feel a little sick.
That's correct. And what the most recent WHO study has shown, I think it was just last week where it was reported, is that in the third trimester, the microcephaly doesn't seem to be a problem, but they don't know about longer term complications. There are other neurologic complications in infants or in utero.
Hi, this is Mason Van Allen.
Hi, Mason, you make the quorum.
Great, that's what I was just told. I was supposed to be in the air by now, but my flight is delayed, so I'm glad we can make a quorum. I'm just going to put it on mute so you don't hear the airport noise. I apologize for not being there today, everyone.
That's great.
Mason, we've just gone through Zika. Unless you have questions, I'll turn it back over to our interim acting vice chair.
What I'd like to do while we have the quorum is that we could go back up and do the adoption of the June 28, 2016 agenda. So do I have a motion?
Second.
Okay, with that,
I'm second. Thank you.
Second. Okay. Now let's move to the consent agenda.
Excuse me. There's a first and a second that wasn't a vote.
Right. No, I'm sorry.
We're done on approval for that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
All approved. Consent agenda. Make a motion to approve the consent agenda from our previous meetings on June 30th, 2015, September 22nd, 2015, and December 22nd, 2015. And I think on one of those meetings, we did not have the quorum on the December 22nd meeting. So a motion to approve on that.
Mr. Chair, I have one petition for action.
Okay, we have to have a...
So I think Vince is listed as both being present and absent on the December, and I believe that Adam Rudd at that time was CEO at Southern Hills.
Right.
Well, he is now, right?
I think he was.
Okay, then, okay.
Okay, noting those two revisions to the agenda, do I have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve with the corrections that were noted.
And second?
Second.
Motion to approve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Hearing none, move to approval. Now, if we go back to our next section of reports, if I can turn it back over to Dr. Iser on modifying the charter.
I'm trying to remember why we put this in. Mason, do you remember, or Rob, do you remember why we put in the modified charter? I don't think that...
I think it was in regards to, we had a discussion related around if a representative, we'll take our interim chair here today, was there to represent the Valley Health System because of the number of votes who required to make a quorum. I think that was the topic.
So that you...
We were thinking about changing the charter, or maybe that was in the bylaws, like trying to reflect back to the memory.
So that if you're here, you represent all of Valley Health System, right? You would represent all of HCA if you were the only one here,
right?
And I hold a testament, is there any problem with having... Would there be one vote per system then, or one vote for all of the St. Roses? So it would be one vote per system, which would then decrease the number of hospitals that would need to be here, just be one who would be delegated from each of the systems. And so there are one, two, three systems, right? And, well, they're not a system, but, so it'd be one for HCA, one for Valley, and one for you. Okay. So that's what the, thank you, Mason, for reminding me.
Which I think is also action item or discussion item number five, the quorum requirements, so I think there's a duplication there.
Well, we changed the number of people, the number of total required attendees, and so it would automatically, then the quorum would stay the same.
Okay.
So if there were, let's say, five or six, then a quorum would be three or four.
I think the proportion for the quorum is a requirement of the open meeting law. So we would be reducing the number of members, but we
correct.
Would have to use the formula of the open meeting law to determine what the quorum is.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I believe that's an action item. Mason, was there anything else on that issue?
No, that was the extent of the conversation we had in the last meeting on at least trying to get some action items accomplished via that quorum requirement that we kind of honed this back.
So if you decide that you want to do this, it would take six votes today to do that. And what I would just recommend, and she just whispered in my ear, is that you want to change that language in both the bylaws and the charter, which then we could revise and bring back to you. But I think we could change that today. Let's see. Members. Oh, it says membership of the FAB will be composed as provided in the charter. So all we have to do is change the charter. I turned away. The bylaws state essentially that the membership is defined in the charter. So the bylaws wouldn't need to be changed if you change the charter to what we just talked about.
Can you use that sense to change the charter to reflect a system membership versus an individual facility membership for the purposes of the membership that you then would define the quorum requirements?
Yes.
So you want a motion?
Make a motion to change the charter to reflect a system membership or representative or designee from a system defined as one or more facilities would constitute a quorum, or constitute their membership
just
for that system.
Yeah.
So moved.
I hear a second.
I would second.
I second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any nays or discussion? Seeing none, hearing none, and that motion is approved.
Just for clarification, so would the motion be approved, so does it take effect, or does it need to come back a second time, or we're good?
I think you're good.
But we will still encourage full attendance from all members and all facilities.
Especially those in discussion. Especially those who live nearby.
Correct. Or the ones in there.
Yeah.
All right, so.
So one other question, Mr. Chair, Dr. Eisner, is there anything from a hospital standpoint that we need to be gearing up or any support that you need?
For Zika?
For Zika.
We have put out a health alert network to clinicians throughout. I'm not sure that there's anything that you all need to do, except maybe to reemphasize that people who have the symptom complex that is well advertised and who have been to these countries should be tested. And then I would also ask off of Zika, back on the modified charters, that you go back to your own systems and let people know within your system.
Okay, moving back to our report section, we can discuss the antibiotic stewardship.
So this is something that CDC, we've talked about this before at this meeting, but the CDC has recognized that one of its, quote, winnable battles is to try to minimize the number of drugs, the number of bacteria that become more and more and more drug resistant. And the way to do that, one of the ways to do that is to monitor with an antibiogram within the hospital systems here locally and regionally what resistance patterns we see. And I know that we had some money to do the initial antibiogram, and I turned over to Dr. Johnson to update us on where we are on that. Okay, so we are doing that. We want to work with you and would hope that you would support us in that by making sure that when our epidemiology staff calls, that your infection control staff and your laboratory staff work with us to give us those patterns. We only have money for one, but I can say that as we start to look like we're more and more in the black, this is something that we all should prioritize, and that I will put some money into so we can start looking at this on a monthly level. And that's what we did up in Washoe County. We received the resistance patterns to common bacteria and then published those. And the whole idea then is, and we would, that's where you all might want to come in with quality assurance and infection control, is to monitor which of your physicians are writing which prescriptions and are being filled at your pharmacies for certain bacteria. So E. coli now is becoming more and more resistant. I believe that's the one that now is resistant to everything that we know, and it's been found in a case to be resistant, but that's going to grow, and we need to do our best to stop that. The other parts of antibiotic stewardship, which we don't have much of a role here, is to make sure that cattle and chickens and all sorts of livestock are not given antibiotics as much as they are now. And we have very little of that here, but California, for example, is working on that with their dairy cows, and we should be doing more with that, but that would be part of our goal as well.
Going back, it was a request to submit that data from all the hospitals and the health systems. Do you have that? I know that I think Mason UMC submitted theirs, right? Remember years back?
Well, this would be more recently because it was since Dr. Laca was here.
I believe that's correct. We submitted ours as far back as we possibly could.
All of them, you mean all of your data?
Yeah, I think you were looking for 10 years.
Yes, yep.
And how about your hospital?
I should have warned him, or you should have seen the agenda. And Tony isn't here, but Tony is the one who can tell that. What we can do is that we will get back to you by email what we have and what we don't have.
Because the chief medical officers meet from all the hospitals and systems and come together. I think there was some discussion that they would spearhead that, but then I did not see email trails that went.
I didn't either.
That, so I don't know where that. Maybe there was some engagement to do that and follow through, but we were thinking it might have been handled by them, and I'm not sure that took place.
We'll get back to you with an email.
Yeah, I'll follow up with my director of epidemiology.
A question, if I can, for Bill. Bill, this is Todd Sklamberg. Are you still on the phone? Yes.
Yes, I am, Todd.
Yeah, Bill, from a Nevada Hospital Association standpoint and our work on this, is there any coordination that can be done with the Southern Nevada Health District as we look at this very important topic.
We certainly could take it before the membership. We have a meeting tomorrow in 2 weeks, and we could put this on the agenda, and I believe it would be appropriate.
And I'll talk a little bit more about data and all that kind of stuff when we get down to Roman numeral 6, which would be a good time, Bill, to coordinate with you statewide, but certainly in Lincoln, Nye, and Esmeralda, which are sort of, we're trying to take them under our wing. I don't think there's any hospital in Esmeralda, and there's only the one in, it's not in Pioche, Bill, it's right south of Pioche. And then the one in Pahrump. Those are the only other two hospitals in these four counties, besides you all, in these four counties.
All right. There are the Gramercy Girls in Caliente.
Caliente, yep.
And this is the hospital in Pahrump, and then I guess it's Steve's in Clark County, but...
Yes, it is.
Okay. Right. I'd be happy to have this on our agenda, and so... we can coordinate after this and maybe have you come do a presentation to the groups. We are actually meeting in Las Vegas. So if you want to give me a call after this meeting, we can coordinate getting you on the agenda and have you do a presentation.
Sure. Can't you have it in a cooler part of the state? I'm just joking, of course. No, actually, I don't have to travel, so that's good for me.
All right. So we'll close that issue out on that. I had a message come through on the previous issue. Can we go back on an issue just for clarification? Back on the charter quorum issue versus a vote issue, the requirements for the quorum versus the vote. So with a system, I don't know the number of votes per facilities they have, or just one vote?
The way you amended the charter is one vote per system.
Okay.
That's how I heard you.
Is that the motion?
Yes.
Okay. I think that it's unfair to change the charter to have you represent, for example, all of Valley, but then you get how many votes now? Five?
Five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which means that you could overwhelm, by yourself, you could overwhelm all of the single hospital systems.
Which is kind of the way to set up previous to this. I just think there was a comment about if it was a special assessment or something like that. And a system like this, the same benefit as a single hospital, that assessment would be multiplied.
Well, the assessment, of course, would be multiplied. Just
only for the...
I just want to know each other too well.
All right. Standard reports, Dr. Arden.
Well, I think we were at legislative update.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So, and then I can give you one too if you don't mind. But Bill?
Bill, can you hear me? Bill, can you hear me? Legislative update?
Right. I'll give you a high level report. As you all may know, SB 483, which Congress passed, it was passed last legislative session. The legislative commission, I believe, yesterday adopted the final regulations for the implementation of that. And so for all of the providers who are impacted by that, you can anticipate to start seeing the regulations and the processes for you to follow for complying with SB 483 passes. The other thing that I'd point out is obviously the election is a very obvious thing, but the primaries are over now, and now to the final races. If anybody's interested, we've created a spreadsheet that has all of the various races and the candidates in it by registered voters. What's important with this election cycle, during the last election cycle 2 years ago, we saw a red wave come through. All the political pundits, and as you look at the registered voters, we anticipate through the next general election that the Assembly will be moving back to Democrat control. The Senate has a slight chance of continuing to be maintained by the Republicans, but there are three seats that are up for election that could go either way, and right now the Senate is 11 to 10 Republican control. And so there is the possibility that Senate could also move to the Democrats with the administration continuing to be Republican. The only importance of that is that tends to drive the types of issues that are linked with the legislative process, and so that's the only reason that I mention it. But again, if anybody's interested in seeing all the various places that are out there and what the registered voters and each district look like, you just send me an email and I'll be happy to provide you that report. A couple of other things that are going to be coming out. The governor has held a forum recently, or a summit, June 21st, announcing his continued legislative push for control drugs, and so we can anticipate significant efforts during the legislative session to put further oversight and control on how prescription painkillers are prescribed and the practice followed by that. That will impact our, obviously, our physicians, but that's also going to have an impact on the hospital and how we manage that for our physicians, particularly in the ER. The other thing that we have been getting from the governor's office with respect to the upcoming legislative session is the budget, and that always is very concerning to everybody from a lot of public health perspectives as well as from the provider community. We understand that the agencies have all prepared their budgets with the inflation adjustments for population. But they have also been directed to, once they have adjusted their budgets for population growth, then to do a 5% budget reduction. And so that's very concerning. What's driving that is the revenues projected for this biennium based on the last economic forum in April of 2015 haven't materialized as they had projected. And the state is running, and this number fluctuates from day to day. And depending on when you talk to governor staff, it fluctuates anywhere from $5 million to $50 million with this. We anticipate that they'll end up having a budget shortfall this year, which means going into the legislative session, they may have to immediately pass special appropriations, pulling monies in from the next biennium to help cover current biennium's expenditures. Typically, what happens there is providers will have reimbursement slow down in early spring and sometimes delayed until July. So when these types of situations happen, it's very concerning to the providers. But while there's discussions that there are suggestions that the economy is improving, that's not being reflected in the revenues that the state has planned on for just buying in. As far as legislation, obviously we're in the interim legislative cycle, and so the only thing that's really happening from a legislative standpoint is, you know, the various committees, legislative commissions, continue to work with state agencies to adopt the regulations, implement legislative for last session, as an example of the SB 483 on this last legislation. The committee that's probably the most interest, and it's not the only committee, because there's a number of standing committees, the finance committee, the education committee, there's several commissions that have been appointed specific to targeted to specific issues like nursing homes, etc. But the healthcare committee is the one that looks from a global perspective. The healthcare committee has been focused this interim legislative process on having each of its hearings focused on subject matters, and I'll run down a list of those subject matters and touch on a couple of them. But what's important about this is that the healthcare committee is going through this process. They started in November of 2015 holding committee hearings. They'll hold this committee hearing tomorrow. There'll be one in July. And in August, they will finalize their agenda. And what I mean by that is the committee has the ability to introduce legislation to the 2017 legislature. I believe that they have 10 pieces of legislation that they can introduce. The importance of understanding what that legislation is that it comes from the healthcare committee, it can be presented in a way that appears to be bipartisan and also being represented by both houses, the Senate and the Assembly. So it does add a little bit of weight to the legislation process as it's being considered in the legislatures. So it's always very important to track what's going on in the Health Care Committee and make sure that you're engaged in that process. So what have been some of the issues? And I'm going to hit on some of these. I mean, I'm going to go through them very quickly, but I'm happy to answer questions. The committee has wanted to understand the impact of the Affordable Health Care Act as it relates to Medicaid growth, as well as the insurance expansion. So they have an idea about that. There's been a high interest in workforce. They've had a number, they had one day where it was focused very much on GMA residency training, nursing education, allied healthcare professionals, paramedics, etc. Understanding that we have more people who are insured either through Medicaid or through the insurance exchange, which are putting a lot of demand on providers. The reality is the uninsured, right or wrong, use the system less than those that have coverage. And so we're seeing an increase in the use of people who now are Medicaid versus when they were uninsured. And that is exacerbating the healthcare workforce. And so they've had a lot of focus on that. And I would be surprised if they don't have some recommendations on some committee related to health workforce. Telemedicine has been another focus of the committee, and that's been more from the standpoint of how can telemedicine be used to meet the behavioral health, mental health needs of not only rural Nevada, but also in our urban areas because of the health care professional shortage that we have with psychiatrists and MSWs. Public health, but I'll let Dr. Isaac talk about that because he was actually one of the presenters on that, but they wanted to understand how the local health districts interface with the state health district, and Dr. Isaac and others did an immense job on presenting that. Mental health has really been a big issue with this committee. They've had a day spent on that, and they're spending both, if not all day tomorrow, again on mental health. We continue to have lots of challenges to make sure that that population is moving through the system and that they're getting the appropriate care that they need versus being held up in a hospital ER. And I'm going to talk about that with the next subject. But mental health is something that I would again expect that we will see the healthcare committee moving some legislation forward on that. They did pass it the last legislative session, S7, which expanded the capability or the authority of adding TAs to the category to replace individuals on and LTVK. But it also expanded who could release somebody from an illegal hold to include a TA under the physician license, supervising physician. But independently, you could have a nurse practitioner or an MSW, but the licensing board of those two organizations had to establish criteria that their licensees would have to need in part of additional education to be able to be authorized to do that legal 2000 release process. To date, and even though we've been pressing on this pretty far, and I know the healthcare committee chairman, Assemblyman Austin is, we're calling a special meeting, he's convening that special meeting to discuss that because those standards have not been established. So we are still, even though it was passed in 2015, we are still not able to use these additional healthcare professionals to help manage the mental health population. The key there is they believe that more than 50% of the patients that we are holding in our ERs to be moved to the state facility for the psychiatric evaluation don't need inpatient care. And if we have the resources, we could possibly evaluate and release from our ERs, which would take strain off a lot of ERs as well as the state and a lot of the resources. There's been a fair amount of discussion about Medicaid and the adequacy of the network, and that's been a big concern for a lot of providers, the nursing homes, specialty hospitals, our school services, acute care hospitals. The challenge that we're having is that 70-something% of our patients are under the managed care organization, and when we talk about adequacy of network, our concern is that the managed care organizations really have not gone out and fully negotiated contracts with the providers in the community. And so we're having a lot of patients held up in our hospitals that are on the LTK hold or are in our hospitals on administrative. They come in for an acute care, and their levels of care have dropped, and now they need to be placed into a nursing home or some other mid-level care facility. But there's not beds under contract to move that population. So that's been a big issue. That's something that we, the hospital association, have proposed to the committee that they consider reducing, and I'll talk about how that cost is going up in a few seconds. Another big issue for the hospital, I don't know that, and possibly for physicians, they had a presentation from the governor's office, consumer health assistance, and that presentation was focused on how consumers are being protected, the balance of billing, and what resources are available to help people deal with those huge balances when they are providing care outside of the network. And it's concerning about when we have those types of discussions, they generally also raise the possibility of introducing legislation on amount of billing or mandated ERAs. So there's been a discussion about adequacy of network, and in fact, the insurance commissioner adopted new regulations on adequacy of network for health plans. This really only applies to single and small groups, which is about 25% of the commercial insured lives. They did appoint the advisory committee that has represented from the insurance industry, from the consumers, and from the healthcare provider community. And that committee is now meeting, and they're working on developing the adequacy of network requirements for health plans that will be sold in 2018. This committee was implemented as a result of legislation that passed in 2015 on adequacy of network. A lot of discussion on children's health-related issues, whether it was in autism, perinatal care, etc. So I would expect that we could see legislation coming out of the committee with respect to children's health care issues. Again, tomorrow, the health care committee is going to be focused on behavior health again. And then in August, July, I don't know what the agenda will be right yet and what they'll be focusing on. But the other thing that the health care committee has done is they put out a solicitation, and anybody who has been on the distribution list for the health care committee agendas, minutes, etc., probably received this invitation, but they put out this solicitation asking for suggestions and or recommendations that the health care committee should consider as part of the legislation that they would propose moving forward in 2017. I can tell you that the Nevada Hospital Association submitted our comments are focused on dealing with ambulatory surgery centers to ensure that they are truly providing surgeries in their environment for patients who can be ambulatory and discharged versus into intermediate level care facilities. We continue to push for more funding for graduate medical education, and we also submitted our input on, and while this should be able to be managed administratively, we don't seem to be making progress in that arena, but we've asked that the legislature consider adopting guidelines for adequacy of network for Medicaid, which is not currently in regulation or in law. And so those were the three focuses that the Nevada Hospital Association submitted comments on. And with that, I'll stop and answer any questions that you might have.
All right, are there any questions for Bill Welch?
No, just a...
Thank you, Bill, for that update.
You bet. Thank you. I'm going to have to apologize if I have to drive across the valley to get over to Florida University in Mass. I'm going to be heading out, so if there's no other questions, I'll be signing off.
Very quickly for the public health agenda. Very quickly for the public health agenda, we talked about tobacco and trying to find ways to, for the legislature to help us decrease the usage of tobacco, to tax e-cigarettes at the same rate and to incorporate them into the Clean Air Act. So the same places where you cannot smoke cigarettes, you cannot do e-cigarettes. Part of that is for businesses so that they don't know what to do with e-cigarettes now. So if you're, if you don't allow tobacco smoking in your facility because of the Clean Indoor Air Act, then automatically e-cigarettes would be included. We did ask that BMI, which is a standard measurement of obesity, be put back into the schools. It was allowed to sunset at the last legislature, but we need it, and really everyone here needs it, so that we can apply for grants, so that we can try to provide the policy initiatives to help increase exercise and to decrease non-nutritional foods. I think everyone here knows about our EMS legislation. It's been introduced two times in the past, and we think it might pass this time because of the hearing that we had last Thursday. Some of you were here listening to that hearing, and it's very clear that EMS throughout the state needs better funding, and this would do it. Senator Whitehouse, Woodhouse had proposed $1 per homeowner's insurance, so if you had a home and a cabin, so you had two policies and you had two cars, it would be $4 a year, which isn't very much. So 50 cents every 6 months for car and $1 every year for the other. And I think that with Mr. Oscarson in the back of the room and hearing some of the discussion that took place and the and how the trauma registry is unfunded and unworkable, still after 10 years of requirement, I think there may be a movement towards that. And then the other thing that may need a little bit of explanation, there is the Northern Lab Public Health Laboratory, and they, under the law, can designate other public health laboratories, and under the law, they designated our laboratory as part of them. And what we want to do is to detie those and to have our own public health lab separate completely from the Northern Lab. So an example would be, right now there, we do have a couple of disagreements with the Northern Lab. If they wanted to, they could decertify us tomorrow if they wanted to. That would not serve this community very well. We have had a couple of conversations about what the two labs do, what should be duplications, and there should be some duplications, and what shouldn't be duplicated. And so we'll continue those discussions with the state and the Northern Lab. But that's one of the things I've been trying to push, and that we recommended to the Southern Nevada Forum to take forward for us. I don't believe I have anything else on legislation. And I think the quorum will still be the quorum, except we have fewer members now. So I don't know that we need to discuss that more.
Standing reports.
So this was an item that I think we brought up last time. What kind of standing reports do you want? We added in the chief health officer report, which really allows me to give you a whole bunch of different reports underneath that. But are there other standing reports that you would like, or do you feel that working with your vice chair and your chair, that we can determine what you would like to hear from me and staff at any subsequent meetings?
I think maybe sitting down with the invite and notice request for items that you're typically done in that as far as the report item. And maybe a list of what you're planning on discussing.
Sure.
You already know that, so we can talk to people within our respective areas as well.
Right.
So that's more up to speed and a better discussion maybe.
So, you know, for example, the Zika could be under the chief health officer, but we agendized that for you. And we did send out what our primary topic is, which is it is trauma update, trauma registry, and I was going to make a few comments on opioids when we get there. Michelle, that's okay with you? I mean, you've got that down to send out a request for topics. Okay, good.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, so back to you for standing reports on those two.
So, as you know, we did have the hearing last week related to the expansion, or the request for expansion to three additional level three trauma centers. Each hospital that requested that was allowed 10 minutes to make their case in front of the Board of Health. The RTAB is represented by Dr. Fields, had another 10 minutes. That's what he was limited, and I think he was cut off as well. And then Mr. Hammond made a report on what our recommendations were, and that we didn't put a time agenda on that because we knew that that's where most of the questions would come in from the board about what reports did we use, what data things did we use, what are some of the issues with that. The board voted 7-2 on our recommendation that the level three trauma centers would not be approved at this point in time. They made a recommendation that we come back with them with a plan on how to proceed next month, and then to see if they agree with that plan that we can implement it. So Mr. Hammond right now is talking to the possible contractors to look at the system. And so we are meeting with the RTAB, which is charged with making these recommendations to me and to the board on July 7th, I believe. So we'll bring back to them some recommendations on what we think should happen. They'll come back to us with their recommendations, and then we'll take those to the board. So I'm not sure what those will be. I do think, and we can probably update you, those of you who were here last week know that we've been working with the state to manage the trauma registry for them, because they probably don't have the technical capability to be able to do that. So we do think that they're now going to think about delegating that responsibility to us. And this is what we promise everyone here, as well as to the state and all the hospitals, is that the de-identified data will be open source, meaning that anyone can access them and can analyze them after they're clean. So for example, UMC sent up a trial run, and it had patient identifying data on it, which they requested, and they were removed from the registry. But so that kind of stuff we would have to make sure is not available to anyone in the public at all. And I know you all know the reasons for that. So we are thinking that we will get the trauma registry down here. And again, the double check on if anyone suspects our honesty, I don't think any of you do. I don't think any of the hospital systems do, but you will have access to the same data as what we did do. And certainly our reports, and we would be generating reports, and then should we get the funding, then we can develop mitigation plans. So what parts of the valley or the county are we finding more trauma? And my prediction is we'll find more homeowner and trauma up by Aliante. I go square dancing down someplace sort of east of here at an over 55 trailer park, where they've got a nice recreational facility. I would suspect that we might see more trauma there, just because we see more, generally more trauma in young people and in old people. But then that will give us, to determine the type of trauma, will give us a way to go out and try to do educational programs. And I do think that one of the things that I've told John and Dr. Johnson here is that I would like a report on gunshot wounds and where are those scenes, to try to give us an idea of what that issue might be. And I hope that that doesn't run afoul of anyone's political issues. It's not a Second Amendment issue. It's just we really do need to know what causes our trauma, and how, what can we do to change policy to help mitigate that trauma. We have been working with the state on other databases, and we're likely going to get several of those, again, because of our capability. And what the state has told me quite directly is that we have the capability with informaticians and our IT staff and our epidemiologists that they don't have. And so they're happy to give us small amounts of pockets of money to help manage their databases. And then again, all of these would be open. The last piece is on opioids and working with the Clark County Medical Society. we were trying to get into the interim committee on healthcare, and Megan, who is their liaison, called me right before the governor made his announcement to say the governor's task force is going to do this, and so it wouldn't be heard by the legislative committee. And I, of course, lamented, because I think that that should be, we should have hearings there as well. And I asked her if the governor's task force included any of the medical societies, any of organized medicine, and sadly, they don't. And so, but we organized medicine, CCMS, Washoe County, I think there's another county medical society, and the Nevada State Medical Association can give public comment. But we will be working with the medical society to put out information about opioids, opioid overprescribing, opioid addiction, naloxone, which is now a legal treatment that most anyone can have. So you will see a whole lot of information coming out, probably jointly labeled with CCMS and us, over the next couple of months to try to stem the tide of opioid addiction, use, overuse, and overdoses.
Any discussion on any of the subject matter with Dr. Ritzer brought up in his report?
Well stated, thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate any feedback from you all on any of these items or other items. You all have my email, just email me, please.
All right, moving to our next item, Facility Advisory Board reports. Any comment from anybody? Or the committee on the phone, emerging issues, topics? I'm going to waste my time briefly just trying to think about some things that are going on. I think we'll touch on the workforce issues probably. I think we're seeing some unprecedented volume this year, which was passed last year. I know that ERC was on a little bit of a yellow-red a couple weeks ago, or just a couple days ago, as a matter of fact, which is odd in the summer, so we have to multiple resources coming on board, but I think that employment recapture of those workers, continue to grow, Medicaid expansion, all that's put a lot of strain on the system of physical capacity and workforce capacity, so those will be some things we'll continue to deal with, I think, as a group through the NHA as well.
And I think you know, I don't know about the roses, but the two of you are really expanding your residency programs. And I know Andy Eisen, Dr. Eisen, very well. And so that's going to help us as much as anything, although it's still 2, 3, 4 years away. But expanding those residency programs will really help us with the physician workforce. Turo is starting an APRN program. I believe it's next year. They're still putting out PAs. That's going to help our workforce. I don't think Roseman has...
They had a little hiccup with the first LCMG.
They did.
We actually are working with UNLV, and we expect that we'll probably have upwards of 120 residents by the time we're done.
And that's mostly primary care?
It'll be mixed.
Yeah, and I
we're working with the school to look at targeting what it means.
And I believe that from listening to non-UNLV, UNR-based residencies, that most of the first $5 million, I'm trying to find a nice way of saying this, most of the $5 million went to UNLV and UNR, with some going to Valley, as I recall, because Andy told me about that. I'm not sure that you got any of that.
No, we weren't at a place
to be able to do
we
that.
We actually had received the funds. So
you didn't need any of that money. And I don't know that you all got any money for residency programs either from the governor's funds.
Okay, other issues, other items of discussion?
Okay. Public comment.
Then back to our move for public comment. I'm sorry, can you move
to the workforce, and I'm not sure if anybody, I know UNLV was doing their RFP for their nursing program. I think that came up in the Nevada Hospital Association, but I was just curious if any of the other hospitals were participating in that RFP for the nursing program. We decided not to at UMC.
We just acknowledged our current efforts that we're doing with some education programs, but did not.
Mason, this is Todd. I'm not aware of anything from HCA.
I wasn't sure if I thought it was an interesting proposal from RFP, and I actually contacted the president of UNLV to let know his our concerns on RFP for nursing students. You know, we need them, but he was concerned that we were being asked to bid on who was going to get nursing students at their hospital. So thanks for that, Don. I appreciate it.
Okay. I hear no other discussion. Let's move on to a public comment on any topic. Any public comment on any topic? Hearing none, seeing none. I think we're ready to move for adjournment in the meeting. No other discussion. All right, move for adjournment. Favor?
Aye.
Any names? For adjournment.
Thank you all for coming and making this special effort today.
Good night.
Well, that was the chair.